Before we start, one thing you should know, because it changes how you hear everything that follows. The person you are about to meet is not a person. They are a composite, built from more than 20 people who wrote to us describing the same life, and their voice, like mine, is synthesized. Nobody is being quoted. Nobody's story is being told as their own. What is real is the pattern underneath all of them, and that is the only thing here worth your time. You are sitting at a polished conference table. It is a Tuesday afternoon. You have just watched a colleague present a project plan. It is the exact architecture you sketched out on a whiteboard 3 months ago, connecting three entirely different departments. But he is the one presenting it, because he is the senior specialist in just one of those departments. Everyone is nodding. He is getting the budget. What is happening in your chest right in that moment?
It feels like a very familiar kind of hollow.
Familiar?
Yes, because it is not the first time. It is not even the fifth time. I sit there and I think, well, I built the bridge, but I do not own the land on either side, so I do not get to cut the ribbon. And the hollow feeling is a mix of anger, obviously, but also exhaustion, because I know exactly how I got there. I spent weeks learning the language of the operations team, and then I spent weeks understanding the supply chain software, and I put them together. But on paper, I'm just a project manager, or a consultant, or whatever vague title I have had to accept this time. I'm a job hopper. That's what the hiring algorithms see. That's what human resources sees. A master of none. So when the specialist takes the idea and runs with it, it makes sense to the room. It fits the hierarchy. But in my chest, I'm just so tired of being the invisible glue.
You have spent over 2 decades being the invisible glue, and you've had to pay for the privilege of doing it.
I really have, literally and figuratively. I look back at my late 20s and my 30s. While my peers were buying houses and settling into their chosen tracks, I was always the one buying textbooks for a completely different industry on a Friday night. I would spend my weekends and all my disposable income deep diving into emerging technology or behavioral economics or systems design just because I saw a thread and I had to pull it. I sacrificed a lot of stability for that. I missed family dinners because I was consumed by a new project that had nothing to do with my actual job. I took pay cuts to move sideways into different roles because I wanted to learn how the other half of a business worked. I started from the bottom over and over again. And you know, you do that enough times and suddenly you're in your early 50s and you look at your retirement accounts and you look at the people you started out with who just stayed in their lane, climbed their one ladder, and you realize the financial math does not work in your favor.
The math rewards the straight line.
Exactly. The world pays for the straight line. It pays for the predictable expert. It does not pay for the person who says, "Wait, what if we combine these three completely unrelated things?" Until it works, of course, then it pays the person who commercializes it.
There was a time you thought this way of moving through the world was a flaw, a lack of discipline.
I spent years apologizing for it. In interviews, I would try to craft this neat little narrative that made my winding path look intentional, like I had this grand master plan all along. But inside, I just felt scattered. I felt like I was broken because I couldn't just pick a thing and stick to it for 20 years. People would ask me what my 5-year plan was, and I would just freeze, because my honest answer was that I wanted to follow whatever the most interesting problem was. And you can't say that. People look at you like you're unreliable, like you have a commitment problem. But that changed for you. You stopped apologizing.
But that changed for you. You stopped apologizing.
I did. Eventually, I started to see the pattern. I started to see that every time I dropped into a new environment, I could see things the veterans could not. Not because I was smarter, but because my eyes were adjusted to different light. I had cross-contamination. Good cross-contamination. I realized that my ability to learn quickly, to synthesize, to translate between the engineers and the creatives and the finance people, that was the actual skill. The skill was not the specific software or the specific market. The skill was the translation. The weaving. Once I saw that, I stopped feeling ashamed of my resume. I saw it as a toolkit. But knowing it as a toolkit does not automatically change how the world compensates you for it.
No, it does not.
Tell me about that gap between knowing your own value and trying to live in a world that still insists on asking for your 5-year plan.
That is the daily grind of it.
The gap is exactly where I live. I wake up and I know that I can solve complex, messy problems. I know I can do it faster than a room full of specialists who only look at their own piece of the elephant, because I know how to talk to the trunk and the tail at the same time. But I still have to pay my mortgage. I still have to put food on the table and save for the future. So I constantly feel this violent pull. On one side, there is my brain, which wants to dive into the deep end of something entirely new, something that has absolutely no immediate commercial value, but is just deeply, wildly fascinating to me. I want to spend 3 weeks figuring out how mycelium networks communicate, because I think it might apply to data routing. And on the other side, there is reality. Reality says, Theo, you need to bill hours today. You need to package yourself into a recognizable, easily digestible box so a client will feel safe hiring you.
You have to put on the uniform.
Yes. I have to pretend to be a specialist just long enough to get through the door. And it is exhausting. It takes so much energy to fold myself up like that. And even when I do, I'm always wondering if I'm making a mistake. Am I wasting my time on this client work when I could be exploring this new intersection of ideas? But if I explore the ideas, am I being irresponsible to my family? It's a constant negotiation, and I never feel like I get the balance right.
You mentioned your children.
Yes.
How does watching them navigate their own interests change how this feels for you?
It terrifies me.
Why?
Because I see it in them. I have a teenager who does exactly what I do. 1 month it's all about marine biology, the next month it's vintage radio repair, the next month it's coding a game. And I watch the school system just trying to crush it out of them. The teachers want them to pick a track, choose a major, decide who you're going to be. And my kid comes to me looking so defeated, asking if there is something wrong with them because they don't want to just do one thing.
And you see the cycle starting again.
I see the exact same wall I hit. And I try to tell them, no, this is a beautiful way to be. Your mind is building an incredible map of the world. You are going to be able to see corners and connections that no one else can see. I tell them all the things I wish someone had told me when I was young. But, I also know what it costs. I know the uncredited work. I know the feeling of not belonging anywhere. I know what it's like to sit at that polished table and watch someone else take the prize because they played the game the way the board was drawn. I want to protect my kid from that pain. But the only way to protect them from the pain of being a weaver is to force them to be a specialist. And that would break their spirit.
Right.
It would destroy the best part of who they are, so I cannot do it. I cannot tell them to conform, even though I know conforming is the only way to get a steady paycheck without fighting tooth and nail for it every single day. I am cheering them on while quietly worrying about how they are going to survive in a market that does not understand them, because the systems have not changed. Not enough. And honestly, that is the most frustrating part. People talk a very good game about wanting innovation and outside-the-box thinking. They write articles about it. They put it on their corporate values posters in the break room. They say they want disruptors. But when it comes down to actual hiring or promoting or funding a project, they get scared. They want the safe bet. They want the person with 15 years of continuous, unbroken experience in one specific software platform. They know how to measure that. They can put a price tag on that. They do not know how to value a person who brings 15 years of dropping into unfamiliar territory and figuring out entirely new paradigms from scratch. It does not fit on a spreadsheet.
Do you ever wish you could turn it off? Just pick a lane and stay in it?
Sometimes. When the bills are tight, or when I'm just so tired of having to prove myself all over again to a new room full of people, I think, wouldn't it be nice to just be the undisputed expert of one tiny little domain, to just walk into a room and have everyone defer to you, and you do your one thing, and you go home?
It sounds peaceful.
It sounds like death. I would be bored out of my mind in a week. And then I read an article about something I have never heard of before, or I overhear a conversation between two people in a completely different field, and I feel that spark, that immediate physical need to know how it works and how it connects to the thing I was looking at last week. And I know I could never turn it off, even if I wanted to. It's not something I do, it's how my brain is built. I just wish it did not feel like such a solitary way to live.
You see the architecture of the whole bridge, but the toll booths are all owned by people who only understand the bricks. That is the burden of a synoptic mind in a world of lanes.